Okay, folks, a very good welcome. Very good welcome. What sort of an opener is that? Welcome. And you are listening, of course, to the latest episode, the latest edition of Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Good morning, Ms. Jones.
Good morning, Mr. Parry. How are we doing today?
Very well indeed. I say good morning, but of course it could be any time of the day, couldn't it? Because there are no clocks on Planet Porky, just one continuous ball, so to speak. Now, how have you been,
Ms. Jones? It's a family show, everybody.
It's a family show, absolutely. Yes, yes. Now, how have you been, Ms. Jones? Have you been out getting plenty of exercise?
I have, yeah. I've been sort of venturing out a little bit more, meeting friends. I'm out the other side of a major manuscript and I've got a bit more time now to see my friends and so on. I tend to be a bit tunnel vision when I'm working on a big book. So right. I just hide away and I sit there. But now I have no excuse but to get out there and get my legs moving.
No, absolutely. Get your legs moving. I don't know, Miss Jones. You know, it's all these innuendos. Anyway, I think I'm about to pay the price for getting out and about in the very cold weather. You know, I like cold weather and I like it. I like to feel the cold at the back of my throat and getting into my lungs. But I distinctly feel now the origins of a cold coming on. I think I'm going to get a cold, a bad one.
Well, I hope it's only a cold.
Well, I've examined it in my head about symptoms and all that for COVID and all that, and I think it is a cold. Woke up yesterday morning and really sore throat. So I went for the Strepsils, which I always do, and it went away. But then last night I could feel it's something like a golf ball emerging in the back of my throat. You know what I mean? That sort of feeling.
Yeah, I do know that feeling. That's horrible.
It is, oh,
well, I wish you better, but, you know, stay indoors today would be
well, you've got to get a bit of exercise. Fortunately, I've got a static bike, you know, in my, spare room. Miss Jensen. Honest to God, I don't know, you know. I think you're getting a little frustrated in your head there, you know, with all this confinement. I'm getting to worry about you. But anyway, I'll have to get on the exercise bike.
The only
reason I don't get on the bike much, and I prefer walking, is it's so boring, you know what I mean? It's got a screen, but all the screen shows you is how fast you're going and all that kind of stuff, you know. And people
have you got
say,
one of these Peloton things?
No, I couldn't be bothered with that. Honestly, I think they're all about self-serving, those Peloton people. They all think they're blinking in the Tour de France, don't they? You know, the way they go at it. It's very competitive. And I do it for leisure. But some people say, oh, you can read a book while you're on your bike. No, you can't. Because, you know, you can't concentrate and you've got to lean forward. And anyway, what do I know about it?
I couldn't read a book riding a bike, even if it wasn't going anywhere. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, well, that's what people tell you. You can get like a device to put a book on, you know, the front of your bike and read your book while you're cycling. But anyway, as you quite rightly say, not ideal. Now, I see that your old friend Pammy has got married for the fifth time. How about that?
Which one?
Pammy. Baywatch. Pamela Anderson.
Sorry. I thought you said Panny.
Yeah, well, she's known as Pammy, isn't she? Pamela Anderson.
No, I thought you said Panny, as in P-A-N-Y.
No.
Who the hell's he on about now? No, she has. She has got married. Good for her.
Yeah, fifth time.
It's her bodyguard. It's a classic cliche, isn't it?
Yeah,
marrying your bodyguard.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always something a bit weird about a relationship like that. Marrying the bodyguard, marrying the nanny, or marrying your last wife's best friend always, to me, sounds dodgy.
Yeah, because it's getting hitched with the help. And
yes.
It crosses a line, I think. You know, it's not very professional. But I think she's been locked down with this guy during the whole pandemic thing. And they've obviously grown close. So I hope that it's the real thing.
Yes, well, absolutely. Yeah, well, we wish her well, obviously. Now, talking about old friends of yours and people in the public eye, Andrew Ridgeley is 58. I've always felt Andrew Ridgeley was a bit of a tragic character because he was like the spare half or the spare part of one of the world's most successful groups, wasn't he?
Well, there was nothing spare about him. You know, Wham could not have worked without Andrew. George couldn't have done Wham on his own. And the whole appeal of Wham was the kind of buddy movie thing, wasn't it? You know, two guys against the world.
Yeah.
They can go out and get the girls, but they have more fun together as two chaps. And that was the appeal of Wham. And of course, George used that platform to launch his own solo career. But don't go feeling sorry for Andrew. He's very, very wealthy. He's having a lovely life down in Cornwall.
Yes.
He is very involved in that movement called Surfers Against Sewage.
Oh, yes.
And, it's all to do with cleaning up the ocean, basically. But
I mean, what a daft name for an organisation, Surf Against Sewage. Do you think there'd be an organisation, Surfers for Sewage? I mean, you know.
Well, I doubt it very much.
Yes.
But I saw him not long ago. There was a...
Oh, really?
Must have been about 2 years ago. I say not long. Everything feels like yesterday at the moment, doesn't it?
It's 2 years and a lifetime, Miss Jones.
Yeah, but they usually have an annual birthday party for the Groucho Club. And I think it was the 33rd birthday or something.
Oh, yes.
And Andrew was there and we had a little dance on
really?
The old dance floor. Yeah. He looks a bit like a tortoise these days.
Why?
He's, I don't know, he hasn't aged well to me. He was so exquisitely beautiful as a young man.
Yeah.
And he's kind of bald, he's very thin. He had a three-piece tweed suit on, which was very unsuitable for the occasion.
Yeah.
I was in my disco pants, you know.
Right, your disco pants, eh? Oh, we'll have to have a picture of those, please, Miss Jones. Yeah.
I doubt there is one because you can't take pictures in the Groucho Club, of course.
Yeah.
But it was lovely to see him. It was a blast back to the good old days. We did used to have some fun.
Yeah? Really? Is that a euphemism for something else, Miss Jones?
No, it's a family show. Come on.
It's a family show, you're right. So he's got a wrinkly old face and he looks like a tortoise. That's a very nice way to talk about an old friend, isn't it, eh? And he dresses like a tramp. Yeah, and he dresses like a tramp. Yeah, that's very nice.
No, not at all. He was very smart, in a three-piece tweed suit, which is hardly tramp-like, is it?
Yeah, well, yes.
It just didn't seem kind of appropriate for the occasion.
Well, as you say, you know, I believe anything you say, Miss Jones, when it comes to fashion. Now, what did you think about the sacking of Frank Lampard?
Absolutely brutal, and I thoroughly disapprove. You've got a Chelsea legend here, the club's all-time greatest goal scorer, 11 major trophies. He needed to be given time to grow into that job, and I think Abramovich was cruel. We're still waiting to hear from Frank, aren't we? He hasn't said anything yet.
Well, he issued an initial statement about how proud he was to have been given the honour to manage Chelsea, which is the stock statement when you get out. But
He didn't write that.
No, I shouldn't have
kidded. I want to hear from him. I want the major interview in the Sunday Times or wherever.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You should apply.
How he really feels about Abramovich.
You should apply, Miss Jones. I think you would do a brilliant interview with Frank Lampard. He'd be devastatingly beguiled by you and you'd get the best out of him. I'm sure of that.
Well, thank you. But you know, there's going to be something in his contract where it's going to be an NDA. He's not going to be able to have a right
probably.
To reply, I'm sure.
Probably. No, you're probably right. He's another very wealthy young man, by the way, because obviously they earned fortunes, footballers in that era. But his family, you know, him and his dad, also called Frank Lampard, of course, which your dad probably knew him very well. And West Ham player with Harry Redknapp. And they've invested an awful lot in property and that sort of stuff. You know, I remember being in a pub in Chelsea once, somewhere off the King's Road, and I was with somebody. I noticed a picture of Frank Lampard and his dad on the wall. You know, and I just said to the bar person next time I went and drank, I said, "Oh, is this their local then, the Lampard family?" He said, "No, it's one of their pubs. You know, they had a chain of pubs, they owned it, so they've done very well in sort of property and invested and all that kind of stuff." But it's very Russian, isn't it, the way he was fired, and very typical of Mr. Abramovich.
I'm not sure why this had to happen this way. Did Abramovich listen to the papers? The sports writers were gunning for Frank, weren't they?
Yes. Yes, they were. And not maliciously, but just simply on the results. Because once his win percentage dropped below that of any other Chelsea manager, then everybody knew that somebody was going to pull the plug on Frank Lampard, because that's the way it happens at Chelsea. I mean, this old adage about, oh, you know, you've got to give managers time to settle in and then they get results. No, Mr. Abramovich doesn't do that. He's had 16 managers in 16 years and won 16 trophies because he just believes in instant success. And if it doesn't happen, he just turns them over.
God, you wouldn't want to be his kid then in that case, would you?
Well, I don't know. It's so Russian. I mean, you've got to remember that he comes from a gangster state. That's what Russia is. Russia's a gangster state. And it's run by a group of oligarchs who are all billionaires, who were all given massive assets that used to belong to the state, making themselves billionaires, circumnavigating the globe on huge yachts. And all they have to do to keep that status is not say anything bad about Mr. Putin, the ruler of Russia.
Yeah. One of his sons was at my son's school, Dulwich College.
Oh, yes.
And this boy used to be brought to school in a white Rolls Royce every morning.
This is Mr. Abramovich's son, is it?
Yes.
Yes.
With
two
armed bodyguards.
Yeah,
who would sit outside the classroom door, either side, on stools outside each classroom that the boy was in.
Well, all day.
Well, they weren't in the same classroom all day. They would move around the building.
That's what I mean. I mean, they were there for his protection throughout the school day.
Yes, and I was absolutely furious about it because they were armed. And my son told me, he came home one day and he said, "Mummy, those guys have got guns." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "I came out of the classroom and the guy's jacket was hanging open and I saw the gun holster under his jacket."
That shouldn't be allowed in this country.
Well, a few of us were up in arms. The reason they got away with it is because it's a private school and it's private property.
Right.
And no, you're not allowed to carry guns on the streets of London or anywhere else in the UK.
Yeah.
But I think different rules apply to private property.
Yeah, well, that may well be right, but I totally agree with you. The idea of somebody walking around in a school full of children with a loaded weapon is madness.
What happens is if somebody tries to kidnap the kid and they're on the quad, there is, you know, a shootout
of some
kind, and your kid gets caught in the crossfire.
Yes.
No, thank you.
Yes, absolutely outrageous. I don't know why you would send your child to a school under those circumstances. Surely you just have private tutors, don't you?
Well, except they want them to have the educational experience and they can't play rugby and football on their own.
No, I get all that. I get all that. But it's still an extraordinary situation. But as I say, you know, Russia is the gangster state. Did you see the pictures recently of Mr. Putin's new country estate? It's £1 billion castle stroke manor, you know, to rival sort of, you know, Fontainebleau or something like that. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. And I'm disgusted by stuff like that, really. You know, it's not a good message in the modern world, is it? Especially with what the world is going through right now.
No, it's absolutely right. But it was paid for by all the other oligarchs just to keep Mr. Putin happy. Because, of course, he's running Russia, you know, for the benefit, really, of about 300 or 400 people, you know, those oligarchs and all that. And he quite rightly said at some stage, well, quite rightly, there's nothing right about it, "I can't understand how you guys got all the billions and all I got was the Kremlin, you know. I want a bit of it back." And if you don't give it back and you don't obey yourself, you end up in jail for a very long period of time in Russia. So, you know, it's a weird old place, isn't it? But
They are prisoners as it is, aren't they, in that case, because they're beholden to him.
Yes.
And anything could happen to them at any time.
Yes, that's absolutely
right.
You're
never going to have a secure night's sleep, are you?
No, I totally agree with you. I totally agree. At any time, somebody could turn up who's just a bit stronger than you and, you know, something's gone wrong. No, I totally agree with you. But there's something magnificent about Russia. Have you been to Russia?
I never have.
No.
I've longed to go. I think I told you a while ago, our piano tuner came round. He's Russian.
Yes.
He's got a flat in Moscow.
Wow.
And he's building a house in the Crimea on the Black Sea.
Wow, beautiful.
He goes from London to Moscow on his motorbike.
You mentioned this, on his motorbike.
Back and forth.
Incredible.
And he said that if we, in about a year's time, when his house in the Crimea is finished, that all we have to do is fly to Moscow. He'll show us around Moscow for a couple of days, and then he will drive us down to the Crimea nonstop. Takes him two.
Two days.
I think we're up for it. You know, that sounds like quite a road trip, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But it's magnificent. The Kremlin's magnificent. The architecture's magnificent. All the golden globes over the churches. St. Basil's Cathedral on Red Square. Red Square's magnificent. And I went there before the wall came down. So I saw the sheer bleak horror of communism, you know, at its peak, when there was literally no colour in Moscow in those days. You know, there were no billboards, there were no flashing lights, there were no signs, there were nothing. It was just grey and black and white of, with snow. And then, you know, I went 2 years after the wall came down. It completely transformed itself into sort of Piccadilly Circus. Anyway, enough of Russia. There's a story here about Elaine Page, Miss Jones, which I shouldn't really tell on a family show. But
you're going to.
Well, I will treat it very gently. But apparently Elaine Page is only 4'11".
She's tiny. Yes, I have interviewed her on a few occasions.
Right.
She's very sweet, by the way. She is little. But I mean, she's changed her tune here because she always said that it was an advantage to be a little woman.
Yes. And what she's saying now, it's not.
I think so. I think she's now moaning that, didn't she say her whole life was blighted?
Yes, that's right, because she was small. 11? Yes, yeah. Yes,
but
she
when
did.
She was younger. Maybe it's because she's older now. She must be in her 70s.
I think she is. I think she's 74, I saw somewhere.
Yeah. She does a really good radio show on a Sunday, which is, it's show tunes. It's Elaine Page on Sunday, it's called.
Oh, yeah.
On BBC Radio 2. Oh. I usually listen to it because it's generally on when I'm driving back from Fleet Street after going to the ride.
Yeah.
And on the way to my mother's and so on. But it's a good show. I don't know whether she puts the music together or whether a producer does that. But
yes.
I mean, it's a good, if you like show tunes, which I know a lot of people don't, but we do in our house.
Yes.
It's a great show. But she did go out with Tim Rice for 11 years.
Well, he's about 6 foot six, isn't he?
Oh, he's a giant. Yes, he is.
And
I've spent quite a lot of time with him as well. Mm. One thing I will say is that everybody's the same height lying down.
Well, now you see, there you go, Miss Jones, eh? Hmm? Now, getting down to the nitty-gritty again, I see. But anyway, the story I was going to tell is that she, in the early part of her career, she appeared in Hair, you know, the stage musical.
Yeah, the costume director didn't have a lot to do in that show.
Absolutely right. Everybody on stage was naked. And this is the story. She was 4'11", and she was performing next to a guy who was 6'6". She stumbled and reached out to the guy to get his hand, but missed his hand and hit another part of his body.
Yeah, well, I don't suppose he complained.
Oh, come on, Miss Jones, for goodness sake, you know? Is that all you can say?
It's that kind of show. What are you on about?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know,
it's
really.
It's that kind of show. Everything
You're supposed to dismiss stories like that as being, you know, not fit for broadcast, okay?
Well, so why do you tell it then?
Well, you know, it's a shock factor. I like to hear you get shocked. And
you brought it up.
Okay. Right. Now then, I'm delighted to be able to tell you, Miss Jones, that in France, in Paris, the Asterix theme park near Paris has announced the closure of its Dolphinarium. So the French Parliament is starting to debate a law designed to curb cruelty to animals. That made my day. I cannot stand those dolphinariums or aquariums or whatever they call them, keeping huge fish captive in concrete swimming pools. I think it's disgusting, and I think they should all be closed all around the world, including those in Florida and Disneyland and everywhere else.
I agree.
You agree?
Yes, I have to say I do. I feel very ashamed about dolphins because a few years ago I was in Egypt with my kids.
Yeah.
We went to one of these places where you can swim with dolphins.
Right.
You know, these special pools where the dolphins come in and little children get in the pool with the dolphins.
Yeah.
Oh, they take videos, they take pictures, all the rest of it. And what was I thinking? Allowing my kids to do this kind of thing. You know, dolphins belong in the open ocean. There are places in the world where you can wild swim with dolphins.
Yes, you can. I've been to one.
Like Zanzibar and places like that.
Yeah. But,
you know, that probably isn't as bad. But to get in a pool with a dolphin, they're not meant to be in a swimming pool, are they? And I know that you disapprove of zoos. The only thing I would say about a zoo is that you can't take all those semi-tame animals and put them out into the wild because they wouldn't survive.
No, you can't.
So you have to keep the zoos open for that reason.
Or you have to put the animals down at the end of their life and not replace them.
Yeah, I think that is the answer, isn't it? Yeah. To allow them to live out their natural lifestyle.
That's right.
Then to not replace them. So then you're preventing them from breeding. So is that a good thing?
Well, I think I would rather see the end of a species, and I think there's an awful lot of exaggeration about, you know, threats to species. They say elephants would go. I mean, a lot of the time in certain countries in Africa, they have to cull elephants because there's so many of them, you know. It just happens. It's nature. It's nature's natural cycle. And the idea of keeping any animal captive in a cage when it should be out roaming around countries the size of Africa is terrible. And you're so right about what you've just said about letting them go. The park said its 8 dolphins could not be set free because most were born in captivity or their populations of origin were too far away for them to survive in the open sea. So they're just simply giving them to other oceanariums around Europe. But I hope the other oceanariums eventually, you know, come to the same decision. But anyway, there we are. I swam with dolphins once in a place called Monkey Mia in West Australia. Okay.
Monkey Mia.
It's called.
My daughter's name is Mia. I'm going to start calling her Monkey Mia now.
Yeah, please do. Monkey Mia is a dolphin resort. It's about 100 miles up the coast from Perth and Fremantle. And it is such a beautiful natural little bay, and it's only got like wooden huts there for bars and that kind of stuff, you know, and a sort of motel type place. And you walk out into the sea and the dolphins come to you and you swim with them. You're not allowed to put any sun lotion or anything like that on your body because it gets into the dolphins' blowholes, you know what I mean? And can poison them and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you can play with them and you know, pat them and everything. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic experience. And you know, one I will never forget. But like you quite rightly say, they're completely free. Nobody's captured them or put them in nets or anything like that, you know. But there we are.
They're remarkable creatures. They're incredibly intelligent.
Yes.
And their brain power is said to be on a par with humans.
Yes.
So they just haven't harnessed it yet. But I hope they don't start taking dolphins into laboratories and plugging, you know, electrodes into their brains and all that kind of stuff.
So do I. So do I, really. Now, what do you think about this row about children going back to school, Leslie Ann? I know your children are now not of school age, but it's still terribly important to the opening up of our society that we get children back in school. Do you think, because I'm thinking this way, that maybe we should take some of those vaccinations away from the categories getting them now, the over 75, and divert a few to school teachers?
I don't think it'll work. I do see the merit of that. I have thought this through and had many conversations with people about this. It is true that school-aged children, are less susceptible to, well, we don't know about all the variants, but we know about the ones at the moment. But their parents are at risk, their grandparents are at risk, their teachers are at risk, all the auxiliary staff, the kitchen staff, the gardeners, all those kind of people are at risk, as are all their families. And I'm not sure you can take that big a risk.
No, I think the only way to do it is to do it properly. You've got to vaccinate the teachers. Kids under the age of about 8 don't actually transmit it, we don't think, but teenagers probably do. But I think you've got to vaccinate the teachers, or the children have got to wear a mask in school, and I'm afraid they've got to be tested each day before they go in to make sure they haven't got it.
Well, and then, I watched an interview on television with somebody from the education department talking about this. It is physically and practically impossible to test every school child going into school every day. They can't do it. It would take all day.
But when I have been working in some studios which still allow you to get in, they point a thermometer at your head and take your temperature. And if your temperature is like 36.7, you're okay.
Yeah, but you're not, are you?
It's not foolproof.
Some people are asymptomatic. In fact, that is the reason it's spreading, because so many people are asymptomatic.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I agree that children are missing out on education. I do think they're going to have to wait a bit longer to go back. We don't have this thing harnessed. And until every country is mostly vaccinated, it's just going to circulate round and round. The reason Australia has had only 1,000 cases, New Zealand probably about that many, they shut down their borders immediately. They prevented all flights in and out.
Yes.
And we should have done the same. We were saying this months ago. Why didn't we? Why did we open up and do the stupid eat out to help out campaign? What was all that about?
Yeah, well, you know, that's all mistakes in the past. Now, I, you know, I get I get really tired of people coming on the telly and telling us all how badly it's all been handled. We should now be celebrating rolling out the vaccine and getting on with that. Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and Ms. Leslie and Jones. As people are listening to this, Ms. Jones, I'm going to be preparing for my radio shows this week, and as you've probably gathered, the audiences are growing at an enormously rapid rate to listen to my genius over the weekend.
Yeah, you're doing really well, Mike.
Excuse me, what are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing at all. And that just, it's the use of that word genius, you know.
You don't think it's applicable.
Isn't it usually for other people to point out your genius?
Well, you know, I don't have any problem hiding my light under a bushel or whatever the expression
is. You're not shying coming forward, are you?
Well, there we go.
No, it is a worthwhile show and you're doing extremely well. I'm very proud of you, Michael.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Now, do you remember who Charlotte Cornwell was?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I used to love rock follies on television.
Right, go on. Tell me about it then, because I'll read you this. She was the darling of 70s TV, but then Charlotte Cornwell, who has just died age 71, sadly, took on a vicious critic. She won, but ended up losing her home and having a breakdown. And it was all about a row with Nina Miskew.
Miskoff.
Do you remember all this?
Yeah, I know Nina pretty well. And I do remember the case extremely well because...
What happened?
Okay, Nina wrote a column in which she said something rather rude about Charlotte Cornwell's bottom.
Right.
And, some people might have seen, I have to be diplomatic here because Nina's a friend.
Yeah.
Some people would have seen her column as gratuitously spiteful. Other people would have agreed with Nina that she was entitled to her opinion and that she was paid as a columnist to express her opinion, which is effectively what a columnist does.
Well, Nina was known in that column, as I recall, the bitch on the box, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And she was self-styled as that. You know, she used to do that. There was a talent show she used to do with Marty Webb. Do you remember?
Yes, I do,
Marty Webb, the presenter who died. And Charlotte Cornwell took exception to this and she took Nina to court. Of course, Nina had the weight of a mighty newspaper behind her.
Of course, yeah.
A massive Fleet Street organ
with
access to all the best lawyers because they're the ones who can afford them, as Johnny Depp found when he tried to sue the Sun.
Sure.
You know, I'm afraid you just don't take on a Fleet Street newspaper and win. That sounds unjust, but it is the case.
It is the case.
Charlotte took them on and, of course, she lost.
Yeah.
And so she lost her house and then, of course, had a breakdown. It was a very brutal thing.
Yeah.
She had every right to stand up for herself. But with hindsight, she should have laughed it off.
Well, for such a tiny comment. See what I mean? As I understand it, just looking up about this case you've just outlined, Nina had a feature every week called Wally of the Week. So she just put Charlotte Cornwell in the Wally of the Week. Said, I don't think she's much of an actress and she's got a big bum. Goodness gracious me, to lose your house and your sanity over that. The poor girl must have been tormented all her life. Yeah.
Laugh it off. That's all you can do. I was Wally of the Week in the NME once.
Yeah.
I wore it as a badge of honour. I thought I'd made it.
Yes. No, I totally agree.
You've got to laugh it off. You can't go suing newspapers.
No, I totally agree. If you do, you're going to lose always up because often the judge won't even give you your costs afterwards. And you're talking about tens of thousands of pounds for barristers and all that kind of stuff. And I think judges take the view that when you sue newspapers, it's to try and preserve your own vanity and it's not really a worthwhile legal case. You know what I mean?
A lot of the time, these people think they can make a quick buck. You know, do you remember Gillian Tailforth, the former EastEnders actress?
Very best. I was working on that paper when the verdict came in from the court because it was delayed. Like a lot of high court cases, basically, she and her boyfriend Jeff somebody, who wasn't a very pleasant individual in my view, they
Jeff Knight, wasn't it?
No. Ronnie Knight was Barbara Windsor's husband, wasn't
Jeff
it?
Knight.
Oh, Jeff. Was it Jeff Knight? Oh, it could have been. Yeah. But basically, to explain to our millions of listeners, they were parked up in a lay-by in a 4x4 car, and the report said they were having oral sex in the car, okay? And they both denied it, and they took the Sunday court. They were doing very, very well. until, amazingly, the Sun produced a video of Gillian Taylor-Forth simulating
with a salami. Yes, with
sorry?
A salami. With yeah. a salami.
I think it was a. I think it was a wine bottle. But anyway,
it was a salami. But anyway,
yeah, she was. She simulated a sexual act. Anyway, and this had happened way before this case happened. But she was kind of boasting about her prowess in this particular area of physical interaction between a man and a woman. And of course, sorry, you sniggering again there, Miss Jones.
Well, a little bit, yeah.
Yes,
I mean, it is a family show.
It is a family show. That's right. And of course, what happened was the jury looked at this and thought, oh, and bang, it went. And the costs were £1 million, right? And Gillian Taylor-Forth fainted in the... it must have happened while they were still in court, I'm sorry. Yeah, fainted in the dock and was taken to hospital by ambulance.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, you don't take on a newspaper and win.
No, you don't. And in fact, they had no money to pay the damages. So for the next 10 years, the Sun got regular exclusive stories from her and two-page spreads because she was still a famous actress. And
how boring that must have been for her.
Yeah, exactly, having to do it because she didn't have any money. Anyway, there you go. Talking about people on television, what do you think of the former First Secretary to the Treasury, Ed Balls, and, you know, his increasingly bizarre view of life, that he's actually a clown now and deserves to be used more on television as a clown, dancing and playing the piano and actually playing the fool?
Well, I think he's screwed his chances of going back to politics, hasn't he, really?
Yeah, but I think it's worse than that. I think we're looking at a man now who revels in playing the fool, being the clown, going on, you know, Strictly Comes Dancing and all that kind of stuff. And only 10 years ago, he wanted us to take him so seriously, he was in line to run the economy. He'd become Chancellor of the Exchequer in a government which eventually bust in its financial policies. And I think it's outrageous. I think it's absolutely outrageous that he should be doing what he's doing now, having wanted to be a serious politician. I think it's outrageous.
I think we all felt the same when Anne Widdecombe was on Strictly Come Dancing, didn't we? But, I mean, what he's doing now is not doing a lot for the reputation of his wife, Yvette Cooper.
I totally agree.
Still trying to be taken seriously as a politician.
Yeah, I totally agree, honestly. Yeah, I've got a headline here. Ed Balls could have been the Prime Minister, but now he's making a lasagna on TV. This is another blinking show he's into now, Celebrity Best Home Cook. I mean, I just think these guys must think the general public's, you know, just there to provide them with a living in one way or another. Talking about Anne Widdecombe, by the way, that's really interesting because I did a TV show with Anne Widdecombe. And I actually said to her in one of the breaks, you know, and I said, blimey, Anne, I said, you know, amazing career you've had. At one time, you were asking us to vote for you to become an MP and a member of the cabinet. And then later on, you were asking us to vote for you to make sure you stayed on Strictly Come Dancing. I said, that's quite a change, that. Do you have any regrets about ending your life as a performer on telly when you'd been a serious MP? And do you know what she said? She said, well, she said, of course, my career in politics is now over, and I would never, ever have gone on something like Strictly Come Dancing if I had any ambitions to get back into public office. And about a year later, she became an MEP with Nigel Farage and served in Europe on a very, very big salary.
Do you know what I think is the same, though, when outgoing prime ministers suddenly publish their memoirs?
Yeah.
Because that is fleecing the public as well.
Yes, it is.
You know, we all rush and buy, well, I don't, they rush and buy copies of these memoirs of what it was really like living and working in Number 10 and stuff.
Yes.
And these people clean up. Now, they would not have been in a position to write that book in the first place had we not voted them into office.
I totally agree.
And had we not had faith in them as genuine members of parliament and leaders of the country. So for me, they are fleecing their position.
Yeah.
And I don't think that should be allowed.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting when David Cameron published his own memoir.
Yeah, because nobody bought it to start off with.
Yeah, it remained pretty quickly, that book.
Yeah.
But one thing you can say for Cameron, who I at one time had a lot of respect for, not so much anymore, is that he has kept a very low profile. Yeah. We haven't seen him on the Great British Bake Off or Strictly, have we?
No. But then again, Cameron is an old Etonian, Oxford educated, from a, you know, extremely well-to-do family. His father was a family of stockbrokers. And he hasn't got the personality. David Cameron simply hasn't got the personality to go and do that sort of thing. Anne Widdecombe has, and obviously Ed Balls has. But Cameron was so dull. I told you once, didn't I? He was so dull that when I was interviewing him on radio, I forgot who he was.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
I thought you were going to say you fell asleep.
Well, I did almost, you know. But I, as I went to mention his name, I completely forgot who he was because he was leader of the opposition at the time. So he wasn't prime minister. He was, you know, a would-be sort of, you know, leader of the country. Nobody was sure whether he's ever going to be able to do it. And ever since then, whenever I'm interviewing anybody in a studio now, I always write their name on a piece of paper and put it in front of me, no matter who they are. I don't know what you're laughing at, Miss Jones, because you can get brain fog. You can get brain fog.
Of course you can. Of course you can. But yeah, I actually thought he was quite a charismatic leader. He did have the gift of the gab.
Yeah. I liked him representing our country because I think you're right. I don't mind people from Eton and Oxford running the country. I think it's, you know, the highest office in the country is prime minister. If a chap's got there because he's managed to get a good degree from Oxford, it means at least he's bright enough to do the job, you know, and he will be qualified in the ways of the world, so to speak. And I agree. I thought he was quite a good leader. But talk about dull. I mean, we had a lunch once that he was at. And I don't think he spoke more than 20 words, honestly. He didn't want to give anything away. He wouldn't sort of express an opinion or anything. But there we go. I mean, John Major became Prime Minister. He was pretty dull, wasn't he?
Yeah, but what we didn't know was what was going on under the desk.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely. With old Edwina. I've interviewed Edwina a few times, you know, since those days. And she's never backward in talking about it. You know, she thinks it's all part of the game and all that kind of stuff.
She's shameless, isn't she? I mean, yeah, you know, she wanted to be taken seriously as an MP as well.
Yes.
It's very odd. But to come out with the brand of your lover's knickers, or, you know, in a book, I mean, I did think that was pretty shameful.
Well, I don't know. Honestly, Miss Jones, you know, sometimes you can't, honestly, you can't account for people. It's nothing as queer as fork, as they say in Yorkshire.
That's true. Yeah, but do we want to know that John Major wore underpants from Tesco?
By fronts. I thought they were from Marks and Spencer's. Anyway, who knows? Talk about brain fade, by the way. There was a story on that just recently. People in their 20s are just as forgetful as those who are approaching 60. More than half struggle to find the right word at least once a week, and 50% also can't remember why they entered a room. Have you ever had that?
I do occasionally have that. I'll suddenly need something and I'll go somewhere to get it, elsewhere in the house. And then when I get there, I forget what I came for.
Yes.
But I have a trick. Somebody taught me this.
Oh, yeah.
If you can't remember what it is, you go back to where you first thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
And say I thought I need something. I'm in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I go up to the top floor. By the time I get there, what did I come up here for?
Yeah.
Go back to the kitchen.
Yes.
And it'll come back to you what you went upstairs for.
Yeah, I've had that. Honestly, I know exactly what you mean. I'm just about to go out and I've checked, you know, phone, wallet, you know what I mean? Have I got my, what's the name? You know, my, I'm forgetting. Oyster card.
I can't even remember here.
No, I can't. The Oyster card, you know, for travel and all that. And then I find myself heading back towards the kitchen, and you're quite right. I get in there and thought, why on earth did I come back here for? And I still can't remember when I've gone out through the door. Then I'm halfway down the street and I thought, I didn't pick up my pen because I insist on carrying my own pen around all over the place. Because exactly. I mean, people who go into news agents and use the grubby little pen that's on a chain to fill in their national lottery form. I mean, talk about wanting to impose disease on yourself. Even if COVID wasn't around, you'd never use one of those, would you?
Well, it's like the ones in the bank and the post office.
Oh, absolutely.
On a chain. Yeah. Oh, God, no, I would never use them.
Yeah, no. If I haven't got my own pen on me, I don't write anything down. It's as simple as that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, these days, a lot of people don't carry pens. They they put everything they've got on their phone, don't they?
And yeah, they do. But you can't sign something, not that you really need to sign stuff in the bank or the post office anymore, do you?
No.
You just put your number in on a little thing. But you can't sign something with your phone, is what I was about to say.
No, I totally agree. Now, being a good Welsh girl from the valleys, have you ever come across...
Via Pakistan,
yeah. Now, come on, Miss Jones. Have you ever come across a boyo actor called Ian Gruffudd?
Oh, yeah, him, yeah. He was the big star of a series that my daughter and I were really into over the last few years called
Liar.
Hey? Liar, it was called.
Liar.
He played a surgeon who was kind of drugging women and raping them and making films of them, of himself, abusing them and so on.
Yeah.
And he's married to this woman, and she's called Alice, isn't she?
That's right, Alice, yeah.
And I think that he has gaslighted her. Is that correct?
Yeah. Now, I was going to ask you, what is gaslighting? You see, I don't get this.
Oh, well, it's a horrible thing, and I've had it happen to me, so I know that it's very real. It's when a person tries to convince someone that they're wrong about something or about everything, even when they aren't wrong.
Right.
So they disagree with you, they contradict you. It's a form of abuse. It makes the other person doubt their own sanity. It destroys your self-esteem and your confidence, and you even get to the point where you question your memory.
Right.
And some people gaslight their partners as a way of controlling them.
Yes.
It's a serious form of emotional abuse, I would say.
And it
undermines the other person's self-belief. I went through this with my ex-husband. He also ghosted me, which is when somebody just walks out of a relationship without telling you they're going, and they cease all communication without any warning or justification.
It's a horrible thing to do.
My husband did that to us. He just left one day without saying he was going and without telling us where he was going and without getting back in touch at all. So to go through gaslighting and ghosting is the most dreadful thing. And it took me years to face up to the fact that it was about his ego and about his self-importance, making him blind to the relationship. And actually, when I learned to let go, I realized that I dodged a bullet. You know, it's absolutely no loss to lose somebody like that.
Yeah, well,
because a relationship that's all about control, and I hope Alice is listening, because, you know, actually, you're the winner. You've come out of something that wasn't good for you.
Yeah. No, I accept all that. I first remember him in Hornblower. He was, you know, he was midshipman Hornblower in the famous Hornblower books. And that was, you know, made into TV series. But as you will know, the FA Cup final was played in Wales for, I think it was 6 years, from about 2001 to 2007, because Wembley was being knocked down and rebuilt. And a lot of, you know, sort of Welsh stars would always turn up on Cup Final Day at the Hilton Hotel in Cardiff. And he was one of them. And, you know, over the years, we got to know him quite well and thought he was quite a nice chap. But the description of his behaviour here is just as you've said, it seems horrible. Also, I did see Lara. I thought it was brilliant. But he made another one about a pathologist in Australia. And so he spent like months and months in Australia, where it's alleged that, you know, he may have been socialising with other people to sort of...
dilly-dallying on the way. The sad thing about this story is they've got two daughters.
Yes.
And
who are only 7 and 11, I think.
That's right. And Alice went through hellish IVF to have them. They made several attempts at IVF, most of which failed.
Oh,
and it's a very painful thing to go through. Psychologically damaging, very expensive. So, you know, those girls cost them a lot of money and cost them a lot of emotional grief. And they must have really wanted those children to have gone through all that.
Yeah.
And now he's blown the family apart. And so I think that it's especially sad that they went through so much to get those kids, and now he's walked away from the family.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with all of that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I never got married. I know I'd go on about this all the time, but I'm not sure I could have stayed in a marriage, if you see what I mean, because I have far too selfish a view on life about myself. And also, the responsibilities of bringing up children, I realised from a very early age, if you break up a marriage after 10 years, you're probably leaving children aged about 8 and 6 or something behind without a father and all that. And I really
worried. That's exactly the age that mine were, 8 and 6.
Really? Yeah. Honestly, that's one thing that kept me from ever committing myself. I thought, you know as well as I do in our business in Fleet Street, I think about half the marriages in the office at some stage broke up or were in trouble or weren't working properly. And I saw this all around me and I used to literally wonder, why do these people do this? Why did they get married when it's clear their commitment to it had faded after about 18 months or 2 years and they're all out on the razzle again in Fleet Street? I never quite understood why people got married. I took marriage very seriously, so seriously that I didn't think I'd be able to do it.
Well, it is a fact of life, a biological fact of life, that most people want children.
Yeah.
And in order to have children, most people see the value of being in a committed relationship and bringing them up with two parents.
Yeah.
You know, most people have had that kind of home life themselves. And if they haven't had it, they want to replicate it because they didn't have it.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, we find ourselves drawn to creating a family, having kids, and then disintegration so often happens, sadly.
Yeah.
And losers are the kids every time.
Yes. No, I totally agree. I totally and totally agree with you. But anyway, there we are. Now, just before we go, Miss Jones, of course, it's been a spell of very cold weather recently. I've been out into my garden with my hammer and I've been smashing the ice in the bird baths because the birds land on ice and they hurt themselves and all this kind of stuff. You know, I've been down at the pond in Stockbroker Belt to make sure the ice is broken for the ducks because, you know, ducks can starve if they can't get through the ice and all that. And I just hope that everybody else has been as attentive to the birds in their garden, including yourself, Miss Jones.
Yes, I'm putting out fresh water on the garden table and I've been feeding the bird feeder.
Excellent.
I thought an extraordinary thing happened the other day. I put up an extra bowl of food on the table with some quite big pieces of broken up fat balls that we talked about.
Oh, yes.
So along comes this big fat wood pigeon and he's helping himself. He's stuffing his face.
What is this again? A bird?
A wood pigeon.
A wood pigeon, sorry.
And he's cramming his cheeks with as much food as he can get in.
Yes.
Along come two magpies who are quite sort of gracious and they come and they sit on a chair either end of the table waiting their turn.
Yes.
At which point this wood pigeon starts bigging itself up, you know, flaring its
right.
wing
right.
and so on. Making itself look really menacing and frightening the magpies away.
Yes.
So I thought, well, how does anybody else get a look in?
Yeah.
How can you tell the wood pigeon, you've had enough, right, off you go and let the magpies have a go?
Yeah. And how did you?
Well, I couldn't.
You couldn't? Oh.
So I'm in this dilemma now. Do I want to carry on feeding the wood pigeons?
Yes.
And everybody else is sitting there starving?
Yes. Yes,
or,
well.
You know, because you can't round up the wood pigeons, can you?
Yeah, no, I take your point entirely. The reason I mentioned this to you, because we did talk about looking after birds of the day, I've got a report here. Sightings of some of Britain's best-loved garden birds have fallen. The reduction is blamed on fewer hedges and over-tidy gardens. Now, have you got an over-tidy garden?
No, I let it all grow in. It used to be very manicured. And
right.
Now the bushes have all grown in. We've got lots of trees.
Well, you see, I think that's a better garden. I like that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful garden. We really love this garden.
Yes, yes, I totally agree. Even though I've only got a roof garden, I've got lots of plants in it, but also I leave things like brushes lying around. There's a bag of, pebbles and that I put into the bird baths and that kind of stuff. I leave, you know, like trowels lying around and that kind of stuff to make it look like a garden. You see what I mean? And I do let some of the bushes and things overgrow because I totally agree. There's no point in having a manicured garden. But there you go. Right, Miss Jones, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. As ever, I hope that you're going to have a thoroughly good weekend, although there's not a lot we can do at weekends, obviously, now. But until we meet again, Miss Jones, I say just take great care of you and yours.
And you, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
She did go out with Tim Rice for 11 years.
Well, he's about 6 foot six, isn't he?
Oh, he's a giant. Yes, he is. And I've spent quite a lot of time with him as well.
Mm.
One thing I will say is that everybody's the same height lying down.
Well, now you see, there you go, Miss Jones, eh? Hmm? Now, getting down to the nitty-gritty again, I see. But anyway, the story I was going to tell is that she, in the early part of her career, she appeared in Hair, you know, the stage musical.
Yeah, the costume director didn't have a lot to do in that show.
Absolutely right. Everybody on stage was naked. And this is the story. She was 4'11" and she was performing next to a guy who was 6'6". She stumbled and reached out to the guy to get his hand, but missed his hand and hit another part of his body.
Yeah, well, I don't suppose he complained.
Oh, come on, Miss Jones, for goodness sake, you know? Is that all you can say?
It's that kind of show. What are you on about?
Oh, I don't know,
it's
really.
It's that kind of show. Everything
yeah, but you're supposed to dismiss stories like that as being, you know, not fit for broadcast. They were doing very, very well until, amazingly, the Sun produced a video of Gillian Taylor-Forth simulating
with a salami. Yes, with
sorry?
A salami. With
yes.
a salami.
I think it was a. I think it was a wine bottle. But anyway,
it was a salami. But anyway.
Now, have you got an overtidy garden?